Good day, everyone. Welcome to today's Umpqua Holdings fourth quarter earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Ron Farnsworth. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Melody. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today as we discuss the results of operations for the fourth quarter and full year 2013 for Umpqua Holdings Corporation. This presentation includes forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Safe Harbor Provisions for the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995, which management believes are a benefit to shareholders. These statements are necessarily subject to risk and uncertainty, and actual results could differ materially due to certain risk factors, including those set forth in our filings with the SEC. You should not place undue reliance on forward-looking statements. The company does not intend to correct or update any of the forward-looking statements that we make today. Specific risks in this presentation include whether shareholders approve the merger, whether the companies receive regulatory approvals, the timing of closing, whether the companies have accurately predicted acquisition and consolidation expenses, the timing and amount of savings from consolidation, the expected earnings contributions of both company, and management's ability to effectively integrate the companies. Also, this call may be deemed to be offering or solicitation materials of Umpqua and Sterling in connection with the proposed merger of Sterling with and into Umpqua. Shareholders of both companies are urged to read the joint proxy statement and prospectus included in the registration statement on Form S-4, which Umpqua has filed with the SEC in connection with the proposed acquisition, because it will contain important information about Umpqua, Sterling, the acquisition, and related matters. The directors and executive officers of Umpqua and Sterling may be deemed to be participants in the solicitation of proxies from their respective shareholders. Information regarding the participants and their security holdings can be found in each of Umpqua's and Sterling's most recent proxy statements and certain Form 8Ks filed with the SEC, along with the joint proxy statement prospectus filed with the SEC. All documents filed with the SEC are available for free on the SEC, Umpqua, and Sterling websites, or can be obtained by contacting Umpqua or Sterling's investor relations departments. With me this morning is Ray Davis, President and CEO of Umpqua Holdings Corporation, Court O'Haver, Senior Executive Vice President, and Mark Wardlow, our Chief Credit Officer. Court and Mark will join us for the Q&A session. A two-week rebroadcast of this call will be available 2 hours after the call by dialing 888-203-1112. This phone number and the access code are also noted in the earnings release we issued yesterday afternoon. And with that, I will now turn the call over to Ray Davis.
Okay, thanks, Ron, and good morning, everybody. For the full year of 2013, Umpqua Holdings reported operating earnings of 94 cents per diluted share. For the quarter, operating earnings were 25 cents per diluted share, up from the 24 cents we reported in the third quarter. The quarter's performance highlights were continued strong loan growth, with non-covered loans increasing $125 million, or 2% from September. For the year, we had total loan growth of 10%, excluding the FinPac transaction. Our organic growth was 6%. FinPac reported very strong growth of 8% during the fourth quarter, reflecting traction we are making in the A-paper space. Our non-performing assets continue to shrink, dropping to 0.49% of total assets, or only $57 million. The recovery pool we've discussed the last few years continues to be realized, with $8 million of recoveries this quarter, resulting in $14 million of recoveries for the year. Our home lending division, in spite of declining refinance production volumes, reported a $3 million increase in pre-tax contribution from the third quarter. And with this quarter's dividend payment of 15 cents per share, our full-year payout ratio and operating earnings exceeded 60%, with the yield currently above 3%, which is very strong for the industry. After Ron runs through the financials, I'll provide some comments and color on the progress we're making on closing the Sterling transaction. Now to Ron.
Okay, thanks, Ray. Starting with the balance sheet, we intentionally increased our interest-bearing cash balances this quarter and will continue to do so in the first quarter to provide us with maximum optionality heading into the Sterling balance sheet restructure. The bond portfolio declined 6% this quarter, all from maturities and monthly MBS cash flows. The gradual increase in Treasury interest rates through most of the quarter left the portfolio priced at a small net unrealized loss at quarter end, well within expectations. Our total available liquidity remains very strong at $4.1 billion, which is 35% of total assets and 45% of deposits. During the fourth quarter, our total commercial loan production was $384 million, and our pipeline remains strong at $1.8 billion, down slightly from the third quarter, given the strong production we had in Q4. Between our classic bank loan growth and opening up the FinPac pipe with a lower funding cost, we expect continued strong loan growth heading into 2014. FinPac generated $53 million in new leases during the quarter, up approximately 15% from the third quarter rate. This reflects the growth initiatives to expand into the A-paper channels we discussed last summer. Moving down the balance sheet, covered loans and the FDIC indemnification asset continue to decline as expected. And on the MSR asset increase this quarter, approximately half was from a valuation increase, with the other half from new service loan production. On the liability side, deposits increased 1% during the quarter. Total revenue for the quarter was $138.5 million, an increase of 3% from $134.6 million in the third quarter. Within total revenue for the quarter, net interest income increased $3 million to $110 million. The non-covered loan interest income total declined $700,000, related mostly to higher early prepayment penalty fees last quarter. Investment income increased with lower premium amortization, offsetting the lower coupon income from not buying new bonds. Net premium amortization was $4.6 million for the quarter, down from $7.5 million last quarter. Covered loan interest income increased based on higher discount accretion from dispositions. Keep in mind the higher covered discount accretion is offset by 80% in the change in FDIC indemnification asset line down in non-interest income. Deposit interest expense declined 14% based on higher cost CD runoff, as we projected last quarter, noting our cost of interest-bearing deposits is now 0.25%. Our cost of total deposits is down to 0.18%. On the margin front, non-covered loan yields reflect the lower fee income. The higher taxable investment yield reflects the lower premium amortization, and our cost of interest-bearing deposits declined another 4 basis points. All of this leads to our adjusted net interest margin at 4.12% for the fourth quarter, down slightly from the third quarter, related in the end mostly to intentionally holding the higher average interest-bearing cash balance this quarter, as discussed previously. As for credit quality-related costs, the non-covered provision for loan loss was $3.8 million, with net charge-offs at $3.2 million. Gross charge-offs were $11 million, consistent with management's aggressive approach to clean up non-performing assets. Offsetting 72% of the charge-offs were recoveries of $8 million. Continued realization on the recovery pool we've been discussing for the last few years. On the covered side, the covered provision for loan losses was a recapture of $1.4 million this quarter related to improved market values on the covered collateral. And again, I want to stress this is not a dollar-for-dollar impact to pre-tax income. We do have the 80% loss sharing offset of that amount down in non-interest income, as discussed previously. Total non-interest income was up 2% this quarter, driven by slightly higher mortgage banking revenue. Our home lending production this quarter declined to $360 million, in line with our forecast last quarter. The gain on sale margin was 2.76%, consistent with the third quarter. Our actual loan level pricing remained at a 3% gain on sale margin as expected, but the locked pipeline declined from $148 million in September to $110 million in December, resulting in the 3% loan level margin declining to 2.76%. Based on the lower production volume and pipelines, expenses in the group declined $1.7 million this quarter and will continue to make future adjustments as needed. Servicing revenue continues to grow, increasing 7% for the quarter and up 58% for the year. This represents a growing recurring revenue stream, which now stands at $2.9 million per quarter. And lastly, the MSR valuation provides a natural built-in hedge for rising interest rates as refinancing volume slows. The MSR valuation increased $3 million this quarter to 1.09%, reflecting the increase in mortgage rates. Moving down the P&L, the small gain on sale of investment securities relates to a small trust-preferred security we picked up years ago in an acquisition. Had it marked down during the recession, and with the Volcker Rule announcement in December, we sold it at a gain. We have no remaining securities subject to the Volcker Rule. And the decrease in other non-interest income related to slightly lower debt capital markets revenue. On the operating expense side, expenses decreased quarter over quarter as management continues to ratchet down expenses, noting the $1.7 million decline in home lending expense based on lower volumes discussed previously, is reflected in the compensation and other expense categories. Merger expenses declined this quarter, offset partially by the $1.4 million loss on OREO. Other seasonal and one-time costs were $2 million, and we added approximately $1 million this quarter in marketing and wealth management expense for momentum heading into 2014. One other note on merger expenses as it relates to the non-GAAP, non-operating disclosure in the earnings release. We had a negative tax adjustment on merger expense of $900,000 to adjust for non-deductible merger costs incurred year-to-date. This has no effect on the full-year operating earnings of 94 cents per share. I expect the tax rate to be consistent at approximately 35% in the first quarter of 2014. Just a few comments on capital, and I'll turn the call back to Rick. I've been very pleased with our capital allocation strategy this past year, noting capital was positively leveraged with the increased dividend to shareholders in Q2, the FinPac transaction on July 1st, and the pending merger with Sterling. Our year-end capital levels are strong, with our December 31st TCE ratio at 8.75%, tangible book value per share at $8.49, Tier 1 common ratio at 10.95%, and total risk-based capital ratio at 14.6%. We're projecting healthy pro forma capital ratios for the Sterling merger, which is expected to close in the second quarter of 2014, with our pro forma projected capital ratios at closing being a TCE ratio of 9%, Tier 1 common ratio of 10.5%, and our total risk-based capital ratio at 14%. With that, I'll turn the call back to Ray.
Okay, just a couple more comments before we take your questions. This was obviously a very good year for Umpqua. It was evidenced by solid operating earnings, strong organic growth, continued improvement in credit quality, smart capital management, as Ron said, and continued recognition of the strength of our culture. Obviously, 2014 will be another significant year for our company with our continued focus on organic growth, while we integrate Sterling Financial into Umpqua. The countdown to closing is on, and I'm pleased to report the following. The final S-4 is on file with the SEC, and our special shareholder meeting is now scheduled for February 25th. The regulatory application process is proceeding as expected. Divestiture marketing is on schedule. Our technology conversion and store consolidation plans are nearing completion. Organizational charts have been developed, and integration teams are well into the planning phase to successfully integrate the company. We recognize the scope of this transaction and have devoted significant resources to planning every effort of the integration process following the close to ensure that we are successful. And with that, we'll now take your questions.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are joining us using your speakerphone, also make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, star 1. We'll go first to Joe Morford with RBC Capital Markets.
Thanks. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Joe.
I guess first, Ray, just following up on your comments on Sterling, given that you've had a few months now to work with the folks there, how are you feeling about the financial projections you've made for the deal and, the opportunity to perhaps realize some revenue synergies as well?
Well, I'm not going to project revenue synergies, but I can tell you that the numbers that we did put out when we announced this transaction, we feel very good about. I might also comment that the cooperation, the spirit between the two companies has been absolutely outstanding, probably better than any other acquisition we've handled before. So things are moving swiftly and very smoothly.
Okay, and then the other question was just the commercial lines of credit were up nicely in the quarter. Was much of that attributable to increased line utilization rates?
Joe, it's Cort. A little bit of both. The utilization in the last 12 months has gone up, 5%, 5-7%. We did both. A little bit of both.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll go next to Matthew Clark with Credit Suisse.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Matt.
Can you just confirm, I guess, the contribution from your home lending group? I see the revenue contribution. I'm not sure if I have all the expenses or not. Just curious what the kind of, I guess, pre-tax or after-tax contribution from that group was this quarter.
Yeah, pre-tax $13 million compared to that pre-tax last quarter of $10 million. That's a $3 million increase in pre-tax that Ray referenced in the comments earlier, and that's roughly 7 cents per share for the quarter.
Got it. Okay, thanks. And then I guess if you just trying to isolate, I guess, FinPac a little bit, do you have a sense for what the core margin looked like without FinPac? You know, I think last quarter the thought was it was probably up a basis point without it, but just curious if there was any change there.
It would have been consistent with the change last quarter. So we had a little bit higher bond yields with the lower premiumization, so that core margin excluding FinPac, excluding covered disposal activities, would have been flat, if not up a bit or two.
Okay, thanks. And then lastly, I guess, again, on FinPac, just trying to isolate the credit costs associated with that production, I guess, that you did this quarter. I think it was $1.8 million last quarter.
$1.8 million last quarter, $2.5 million this.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Jeff Rollis with D.A. Davidson.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Jeff.
On the salaries or compensation line down sequentially, a little of that, is that from the mortgage business?
Yeah, actually, the decline on the reported financials was down $1 million. It was a bit more than that in mortgage. We talked about the overall decline in home lending was $1.7 million. Roughly three-quarters of that would have been in the compensation arena. But we had some other seasonal or one-time deals costs that put it back to the $1 million change.
And, Jeff, just a note, I think all the cost saves that we did, put in the mix, we have not realized all of those. That was a partial quarter.
Correct.
So we should see additional expense reductions leading into this quarter.
Okay. That was my follow-up. I guess so at the magnitude of what you saw, or how far complete, or it's just not a full run rate in a quarter?
Not a full run rate yet.
Okay.
Will be.
And then on the margin, I guess if you could just sort of remind us of the kind of the core margin impact as you roll into Sterling, the expectations, and you know, as you carry that heavy or that larger cash balance, what are the expectations?
Well, you know, the larger cash balance once we complete the Sterling merger in the second quarter is going to be reduced because we're going to utilize some of the cash to restructure the balance sheet. Plus two, then it'll be a smaller percentage of the overall balance sheet. But overall, what we talked about last quarter, it was consistent with this quarter. Our projection there would be flat at maybe 5 bps on the adjusted margin.
Great. That's it. Thanks.
Yeah. We'll go next to Jackie Chiara with KBW.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hi.
Ron, I wonder, do you have a rate hurdle that you're looking at? And I know that you're saving some of the cash deployment to restructure the balance sheet, like you just said, but is there any sort of a rate hurdle that you're looking at to begin to buy securities again?
No, there is not. I mean, it's again, we look at this on a total return basis. Rates are still historically low. Yes, they're up a bit from where they were 6 months ago, but you go back any time over the last 20 years, they're historically low. And from a total return standpoint, there's nothing but nothing but pressure and rates up in terms of the impact on equity. So, no, I don't have a specific rate hurdle. What we're doing heading into the first quarter and the second quarter is, again, giving us maximum optionality on the Sterling restructure. Plus, too, if you look back at what we've done over the last year, year and a half, we talked about the capital actions, but we've had significant organic growth. And so you've had the cash waterfall down the balance sheet out of bonds and the loans, and that's by design. We hope that continues.
Okay. And then just a question on the recoveries. Is this a function of customers that are looking to rebuild their credit, or is it just purely due diligence from your staff?
Jackie, this is Mark. We mentioned before, I think, our recovery pool that we identified. These are recoveries coming about because of our workout efforts over the last 4 or 5 years. I think I mentioned that, you know, when we restructured deals with customers, we took additional collateral, we got payment streams pledged, and this is just further realization of those cash flows.
Okay, so it's not indicative of any sort of change from the consumers just looking to clean up and build up again?
No, it's just purely a result of the collection efforts we've had over the last 4 or 5 years during the recession.
Okay, great. Thank you. Those are my questions.
You bet. Thank you.
We'll move on to Steve Cinicarello with UBS.
Afternoon, everyone.
Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, just a quick one on the potential loan growth drivers for 2014. You know, you had, you know, nice benefit from FinPac and this year, or 2013, I should say. As you look ahead, you know, what categories and what areas do you feel should be, you know, the main drivers of loan growth in 2014?
You know, we opened up some new locations last year, so we have our Templeton Ag office now growing very, very nicely in the last 18 months, so that's still a great opportunity for us. Our home building group in Seattle is doing very, very well. You know, the metropolitan markets, the Bay Area, Portland, and Seattle are starting to show some strength, so just continued doing what we do at Umpqua and providing great service is working really well. We're still staying highly focused on C&I, which you'll obviously see in the results. We have seen commercial real estate move up as a total percent, slightly but not dramatic, as real estate values have come back into the market. And obviously, if we can make a good loan on a real estate property with a good customer, we'll do that. So just continued emphasis with our initiatives we put in place in 2013. We are looking at some new opportunities, and obviously with the combination with Sterling and Umpqua, it opens up all kinds of new doors for the combined company in Southern California and areas where we are not. So there's just huge opportunities when we combine up with Sterling.
Perfect, perfect. And then in terms of mortgage banking kind of outlook from here, you know, what would you expect? Are we starting to, you know, kind of bottom out here, or how do you kind of look at that line item going forward?
This is Ray. You know, I'll tell you what, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know what, I can't project rates, but it has been a steady decline. I think one of the things that our management team did a very good job on, and I'm proud of these guys, is when we realized early on that, you know, eventually the refinance bubble was going to burst, we needed to do something. Umpqua, I think, has a history of being very proactive. The fact that we were able to reach out to a FinPac and bring in a quality company like that and to offset the impact that we've had from a declining refinance market has been terrific. We will continue to be as proactive on any declines in the production of mortgage lending should that continue. And I think if, you know, my crystal ball, which I can tell you is no better than anybody else's on this call, you know, probably will continue to gradually run down until we see some more advance in the housing market.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it's star one. If you do have a question, we'll go to Brett Rabatin with Stern AG.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Brett.
Wanted to get a little color on the decline in the non-owner occupied commercial real estate linked quarter. I didn't know if there was anything that affected that. Was there any prepays, or was there anything that was different this quarter?
Brett, this is Mark. Really what that was a reclass of some of our assets. We moved $400 million out of that into a multifamily category to more accurately reflect what was really in that total. So it wasn't a rundown, it was just a reclassification.
Okay. And then just thinking about that portfolio and where you're originating, or the whole loan portfolio, I should say, and where you're originating production today versus the current yields, with FinPac growing, is it fair to say that the compression on the loan portfolio yield going forward should slow, or can you give any color on how you think about sort of loan yields coming on?
Overall, for FinPac's impact, there has been a slight decline from Q3 to Q4 related to just discount accretion on the credit mark. But in terms of loan yields with that growth, they're going to maintain the consistent BC paper space they've always had. The growth we're seeing on that on the A space is still high single digits, very strong, very solid, and another good story for why we're not investing in bonds, right, from that standpoint. In terms of the overall commercial, it's kind of the classic bank ex-FinPac commercial loan yields. We're starting to get close to that point where what's on the books is getting close to new production, much closer than it has been.
Okay, great. Thanks for the color.
Yeah, thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, star one. With no questions in the queue, I'd like to turn the call back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, Melody, I appreciate it. I want to thank everybody for their interest in Umpqua Holdings and their attendance on the call today. This will conclude the call. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining.